General Conference of Elders, which means I do not want this put on the website until after I give it in Cincinnati, okay? I've been asked to speak on this subject, and I thought I would try it on all of you too. Not that any of it applies to any of you here, of course. I'm just joking. It applies to me, applies to all of you. The origin of this lecture was last year at the GCE, when a minister wanted to see me privately, took me aside, somebody I know quite well, and he said, you know, he said, we've heard Mr. Lucas speak about alcoholism in the church, but he says there's a bigger health problem in the church, and that's obesity. And he said, and you're just the man to speak on it. It is a fact that, you know, you can look at Mormons, you can look at Seventh-day Adventists, they look, on average, a lot healthier than we do. So we are, to put it bluntly, an unhealthy church. Not that everybody in this room is. I'm not suggesting that for a minute. And don't anybody be offended by what I'm saying here. But I am concerned that we are an unhealthy church and an unhealthy ministry as well. And, of course, I am part of the problem. It's been 8 months now that I've had this problem with my foot. And I don't know if you remember, but, you know, before I could have the routine surgery on my foot, you know, I had to go on a diet and change my, I had to reduce my A1C because I'm a type 2 diabetic. And A1C is how they measure, you know, the blood sugar level in your body for the last 3 months. So for 100 days, I went on this diet to bring down my A1C because my podiatrist told me that if there were any complications with my foot, then I was more likely to lose my foot because of the diabetes. Diabetics often lose body parts, and the feet are the most likely things to go first, okay? But once they start chopping off bits, it's not long before they start chopping off just about everything. So you got to really take this seriously. So I took it seriously, and I went on this very strict diet. Lost 30 pounds in 3 months. And my A1C went from 7.3 to 5.8. Now, below 6.0, you're technically not diabetic, so I was doing extremely well. Above 7.0 with your A1C, you're prime amputation territory, okay? And if you get above 8, you're almost guaranteed to have something taken off at some point. So, you know, you've got to take it really, really seriously. And for 100 days, I did not eat anything bad at all. And then Annabelle brought a cheesecake for the Feast of Tabernacles. No, that was just my first. That was my first problem, but then it wasn't a problem. I really enjoyed cheesecakes, and I hope there's enough. No. I mean, however, you know, you can have a thin slice without having the whole thing, right? So, you know, we had to be very, very careful. I already had realized that at the feast I was going to have some fun, you know, and eat a bit more than I had been eating for the last 100 days. But once you start eating stuff, you know, then it's hard to stop again. Type 2 diabetes is largely caused by overeating. This was not a problem that we had when we lived in Africa. You know, we had a famine in Africa for a while, so we certainly weren't overeating. But somehow we were fairly healthy in Africa. Of course, when we moved to the United States, employed by the church as a pastor, first of all in Lansing and Flint, and then Lansing and Ann Arbor, there were lots of potlucks. And potlucks can be literally fatal. I've often joked that membership of the church should come with a government health warning. You know, in our booklets, we should put the Surgeon General has determined the membership of this church can be injurious to your health. Or joining this church will reduce your life expectancy. And, you know, just as cigarettes, each cigarette takes 15 minutes of your life, off your life. Each potluck reduces your life expectancy by a couple of days. I'm convinced of it. So like I said, I had to get my A1C down before surgery. And it was interesting. I think we started the diet. My wife went on it with me. It was just before the 4th of July, or maybe the day after the 4th of July. I don't remember. But the first Sabbath, we were in another church area. I won't say which one. And that day was torture for me. I spoke twice. But it was torture for me because we had, I think it was 12 entrees, all looking really nice, 12 main courses set out on the table at this potluck. But we had, I think it was 18 desserts, wasn't it? It was more desserts than main courses. And one of these desserts was my absolute favorite dessert. And I said to Diane, I said, well, we just started the diet. Why can't I just have some, you see? So she said, nope, you can't. She was very strict with me. If she hadn't been there, I would have succumbed to temptation. So it's a good thing she was there. But I didn't want to look at this thing all the way through the meal. So, you know, I sat down at a table with my back to the dessert. But wouldn't you know it, everybody else on the table had to go up and get this dessert and eat it right in front of me. So it was kind of a problem. It was a challenge. But I got through it. And I got through 100 days of this this diet, which I had to do in order to have the surgery. But then, of course, the surgery went wrong. I picked up one of those super bugs in the hospital. Now, my doctor happens to think that because my A1C was down at 5.8, probably diabetes was not much of a factor with the problem I had with my foot. But I'm not so sure. I tend to think it probably did prolong things longer. But, you know, I've been asked by Mr. Luca to speak on this subject because we do have an unhealthy ministry and an unhealthy church. And it's something we need to address. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. This is the scripture that inspires this lecture. Verses 19 through 20. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit? That's the title of this sermon. The body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, that you have from God, and you are not your own, for you were bought at a price. You know, we were bought by Jesus Christ's shed blood. In that sense, our bodies, our lives are not our own. We've become slaves to Jesus Christ. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. So we have a responsibility to take good care of ourselves. And yet, many do not. So where do we start? Look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And verse 16. The Apostle Paul writes in verse 15, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools but as wise, redeeming the time. It actually does, I believe, start with the way that we manage time. Because we're very busy. Let me explain here. A few years ago, Diane and I went out to visit a church member at the Laureate Institute for Eating Disorders. This person had anorexia. Anorexia is not the biggest single eating disorder in the United States. Nor is bulimia. The third eating disorder is the most common one, and that is overeating, which of course contributes to obesity. Obesity is defined by Wikipedia as a medical condition in which excess body fat has accumulated to the extent that it may have an adverse effect on health, leading to reduced life expectancy and or increased health problems. Obesity increases the likelihood of various diseases, particularly heart disease, type 2 diabetes, obstructive sleep apnea, certain types of cancer, and osteoarthritis. It's most commonly caused by a combination of excessive food intake, lack of physical activity, and genetic susceptibility. So, you know, there's a lot of factors here. But it's a major problem. It is actually the country's biggest health problem, by far. And not just this country's, but even the world's biggest health problem. In fact, even in a country like Zimbabwe, which is third world, and where most people live in rural areas which are quite backward, it's interesting because when a study was done, it was found the closer people were to areas that sold European or American food, the worse their health was. So obesity has become a major problem. And it comes down primarily in places like Zimbabwe to processed food. If they stick to their local diet, which is basically corn, which they boil up and then, beat down till it becomes what they call sudza. That's the local diet. It's like mashed potatoes, but it's corn. And it's called sudza, and they put a kind of a sauce on it. It's quite nice. I eat it. It's kind of blah. Doesn't have much taste to it, but it's quite nice. It's very filling. But, when they eat European foods, everything white is considered European. So when I say European, I mean American as well. So when they eat American foods, that's when they have health problems. And the more American food people eat, the worse their health is. And, of course, we have this problem in the United States, too. But time is a big contributory factor to this. At the Institute for Eating Disorders, the director of the institute got up and gave a lecture in which he said that addictions are basically a Western problem, the Western world, and mostly a white problem is what he said. White people have these problems more than other people do. Now, he was talking about all addictions, not just not just an addiction to food. But he said, why is it that we have such a problem with addictions in our culture? And he says, the root cause, the commonality of all addictions is this. People's lives are out of control because they're so stressed out. And they react to that stress by trying to control something. So, in other words, food becomes a major issue. Or it might be something else, alcohol. It might even be, the internet, for example. It might even be pornography on the internet or something. But people have these addictions, and it's a reaction, subliminally, to the stress that people are under. We live very stressful lives. And so ever since then, when I heard this 5 or 6 years ago, ever since then, when anybody talks to me about any addiction, I follow his advice, and that is to say, don't tackle the addiction head on because you probably won't make any progress. What you have to do first is get your life in order, which means establish your priorities, live according to those priorities, and then you'll find the addiction is diminished. Then you can tackle the addiction that you've got. Now, when it comes to getting your life in order, it comes down to one word, kiss. And I'm not talking about kissing your wife or your husband in the morning. KISS stands for keep it simple, stupid. Okay? When you've got your life down to something simple, manageable, then you can start and deal with addictions, including your addiction for food. So let's follow Jesus Christ's advice in Matthew 22, beginning in verse 35, because this is what we should live by. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." We should always keep this in mind. This is the foundation of our lives. This is what we need to learn to live by. This is the solution to so many of our problems, including any addictive behavior that we might be guilty of, that we might be succumbing to. Happiness is found in relationships. Fulfillment is found in relationships. Our relationship, first and foremost, with God the Father and with Jesus Christ. And secondly, our relationships with each other, beginning at home, with our families, with our wife, our husband, our children, our grandchildren. That's where happiness is primarily found. And this is what we should be focusing on, these two things. And when we have these out of whack, when they're out of balance, we're going to suffer in other areas. And we'll find that other things start to go wrong, like we start eating too much, or we start watching too much TV, or we spend too much time on the internet, for example. Because we're trying to fill the emptiness that is the result of not living according to the two great commandments. So this will go a long way to resolving problems with overeating. Look at Galatians chapter 5. And not just overeating. I mean, there are people who have a problem with not eating enough. I've often had people tell me they are struggling with anorexia. And to be honest, I cannot even begin to understand how anybody can have anorexia. It's an alien problem to me. I've never had that problem. David Logan some years ago bought me a t-shirt. Plain white t-shirt, but written across it were boldly were the words, "I beat anorexia." I have a feeling he was joking with me. And I remember wearing this at a picnic in Tasmania in Australia for the feast that year. And, you know, a lot of people thought it was funny, but one lady came up to me and, you know, she was quite serious. She said, "I've struggled with anorexia all my life," she said. And she said, "I see you beat it. And, you know, how did you do it?" And, I mean, and I just said, I said, "Well, you know, it was a long struggle," I said, "and it was very difficult to deal with it. But eventually I realized that the only solution is once you start eating, you don't stop. You just got to keep on eating. Because if you stop, there's too much possibility of you going back into the anorexic state." And I have a feeling there's a lady down in Tasmania still who is eating like, you know, 50 kilos of food a day or something, trying to keep her weight up, and, you know, takes me seriously. I don't know. But who knows? Anyway, Galatians 5. I feel bad about that. I should have been more compassionate. Galatians 5, verses 22 and 23. "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control." That is a fruit of the Spirit. Self-control. Which, of course, is important when it comes to overeating. Self-control. We have to learn to bring our cravings under control and not yield to them. So why then do we eat too much? And again, not everybody does here. I'm not saying everybody does. But I know it's a problem for some. Stress, of course, is just one factor. But let's look at some other factors that plague those in the ministry. But I think, you know, they can affect other people as well. But I'll be addressing the ministers on this when I'm down at the GCE. The ministry have an irregular lifestyle. It's hard to have meals at a regular time. And this, of course, requires more self-discipline. For example, when I'm changing time zones when I travel, that's when I can eat too much quite easily. I fall into this trap every time I travel. I mean, for example, you know, to get to South Africa, I've got 3 flights, okay? And when I get to South Africa, I've got another one to go to Zimbabwe. So I have 4 flights in about 30 hours. And the first flight, Lansing to Detroit, they don't give me anything. They don't even give me a glass of water. But when I fly from Detroit down to Atlanta, quite often, for that stretch, which is 2 hours, I get upgraded to first class because, you know, I fly with them so often, they often upgrade me. And in first class, they stuff you full of all kinds of delicacies. I guess I could say no. But they're free. And, you know, sometimes I just feel like a glass of champagne, even though it is the morning, you know. So I eat all that stuff in first class, and then I get to Atlanta, and because I'm a frequent flyer on Delta, when I'm flying internationally, they let me use their first class lounge, which again means more free food, more delicacies, you see. And I'm also thinking, well, wait a minute, when I get on the plane, it might be hours before they feed me. So I eat something there and drink something there too. And then I get on the plane. It's a 17-hour flight. And there's really nothing to do except eat and drink. I mean, what else is there to do? Some people watch the movies, but I don't hear very well when I'm on the plane. For some reason, I just don't hear them. So I never watch movies. I just read a book and eat. And that's not a good idea when you're sat there for 17 hours. British Airways always warns you that it's not a good idea because a lot of people die from deep vein thrombosis, which is where a blood clot starts in your ankle as a result of not moving, you see. Now, I do take that seriously because both my father and my grandfather died from that. So I take it seriously. So I do get up and walk every hour to the back of the plane where all the food is. So, you know, I figure it's helping with the circulation, okay? So anyway, it does require more self-discipline. Now, Diane's grandmother was one of the most disciplined people I ever knew. We stayed with her on a couple of occasions. Breakfast was always at 7:30, lunch was at 11:30, dinner was at 4:30, and there was absolutely no flexibility, was there? No flexibility at all. And I used to marvel. I thought, how can anybody live like this? Now I realize that's exactly how I need to live. Maybe not exactly the same times, but, you know, three times a day. I mean, there is some suggestion. If you read some health magazines and books, it will say it's best to eat six small meals a day instead of three regular meals a day. But the latest research shows that people who eat six small meals a day end up eating more. So therefore, the three meals a day that our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents and every generation, probably going back to Adam and Eve, makes more sense. They all lived a fairly healthy life. We've got major problems in this generation that other generations didn't have. Another problem that ministers have, and I'm sure many of you have this problem too, is meeting people for lunch. Why does it have to be lunch? Why can't we just meet for a coffee? But a lot of people, you know, when people call me and say, can we get together, and they want to do lunch, I'll say, well, you know, I'd rather just meet and have a coffee or something, or tea in my case. I say, oh, no, let's do lunch. I'll be hungry, you know. So I end up eating another meal, see. I really don't want to. And then, of course, we have potlucks. Now, Lansing doesn't have potlucks as often as some churches do. Some churches have one every single week. And I suspect the life expectancy in those congregations is lower than our congregation. But, you know, that's how some churches operate, potlucks every week. Why can't we have healthy potlucks? I would like to suggest that maybe in 4 weeks, when we have another big day like today with the speech group in the morning, and we have the we'll have the Sabbath school and one or two other things going on. I'd like to suggest we have a potluck and we have a competition to see who can bring the healthiest main course and who can bring the least bad dessert. You think that'd be a good idea? That tastes good. It's got to taste good. Exactly, yes. And, you know, I will be the official food taster for this, okay? So it'll be my job. No, I'm just saying, why can't we do that? Why can't we have concentrated in potlucks on fruit, vegetables, salads, rather than have the most unhealthy food, which generally is what happens with a potluck? And believe me, I know, because a lot of areas I go to, they have potlucks. And when I look at them, I groan because it's just a hopeless battle. All of these things add up to weight, diabetes, and heart problems. Look at Isaiah 55, and verse 2. Isaiah 55 and verse 2. I've only got 45 minutes to do this at the home office, so see how I do here. Isaiah 55 verse 2. Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in abundance. This is an interesting verse, because we spend a lot of money on food which is junk. It's empty calories. It doesn't do us any good at all. So why waste our money on those things? God says, listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in abundance, in real food. This is the advantage that people have in Africa, because generally the food is real food. They don't have the processed foods that we have, which are largely junk. Processed foods basically equals junk. But we eat a lot of processed foods because it saves us time. We don't have the time to prepare meals which are, you know, composed of real food. Look at Proverbs chapter 4. A couple of scriptures here on heart care, because the heart is a major problem. Verse 23, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. We tend to think, by the way, that heart attacks basically is a male problem, but more women are dying now from heart problems than men are in the United States. So it's a big female problem as well. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So take care of your heart is what it's saying here. And then chapter 15 and verse 15. All the days of the afflicted are evil, but he who is of a merry heart has a continual feast. You know, you've got to have a good sense of humor. You got to laugh about things, not take things too seriously. And, you know, that helps as well. Just helps with your countenance and helps with your heart care. That's what it's saying there. Look at Proverbs 26 and verse 16. Here's one that relates directly to diabetes. 26:16. The lazy man is wiser in his own eyes. No, wait a minute. I got the wrong scripture here. 25:16. I'm sorry, 25:16. Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. I'll rephrase it a little bit. Have you found sugar? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and get type 2 diabetes. But realize that it's not just sugar that contributes to that. A lot of things turn to sugar once you get them in your system. For example, potatoes, bread, corn, soy, all turn to sugar. So you've got to keep, in fact, all carbs turn to sugar. So you have to keep them down to a minimum. I read recently the very worst thing, absolutely the worst thing that anybody with diabetes can eat, believe it or not, is white rice. White rice apparently does something. The sugar turns to sugar quicker than anything else. So it's the worst thing you can eat. And you see, quite often I've actually gone to a Chinese restaurant thinking that way I'm avoiding bread and avoiding other carbs, and I'm eating healthier. But a Chinese restaurant is about the worst place that you can go to. So avoid eating Chinese. Look at Luke chapter 21. Luke chapter 21 and verse 34. Take heed to yourselves, that lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day comes on you unexpectedly. You know, you can drop dead very quickly and unexpectedly as a result of carousing, drunkenness, cares of this life, the worries that come with the cares of this life, and that day, the day of your death, comes on you unexpectedly. You got to be careful. If you're not careful, you could wake up dead, so to speak. It happens. A lot of people die in their sleep, so maybe you should stay up all night. No, I don't think that's the idea. But the point is, you know, the way you live is going to have an effect on you. And dissipation, which is actually the word that is used here, the carousing, dissipation is the word in Greek. And dissipation is squandering of money, energy, and resources. Profligate living, I think, is the term that would be used. And, you know, the prodigal son, for example, lived a profligate life, and we should not live a profligate life. So I hope you take all these things to heart, literally, because, you know, I'm concerned about everybody's health. I'm concerned about my own health. My foot, by the way, is doing a lot better. Before I left for South Africa and Zimbabwe, I was given a gel which was prepared by a lab in Texas or Atlanta. We never could figure out where. We talked to a doctor in Atlanta, in Lubbock, Texas, who put us in touch with this lab. And we sent a culture of the infection that I've got, and they developed a gel. And using that gel for the last couple of weeks has led to the wound shrinking to just a pinprick. But it still oozes some of the infection. So it's not completely gone yet. But it's a big improvement. I can now actually use a thinner dressing so I can wear shoes. My ambition is to walk into the GCE wearing a pair of shoes. You know, when you get all the little things that count, you know, walking into the GCE with a pair of shoes is my goal here. So it has improved a great deal. Every day in Zimbabwe it was getting better, which I think was partly the gel and partly the Zimbabwe beer. 3 John chapter 1. Look at 3 John chapter 1. Well, you can't drink the water there, you know, it's dangerous. 3 John 1. And the milk is dangerous at breakfast, so beer on cornflakes isn't too bad. No, I'm just joking. I don't put beer on cornflakes. 3 John, chapter 1. Well, there is only one chapter. Verse 2. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. I say the same thing as I say goodbye to you all at the end of the sermon. I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health. Be in good health, just as your soul prospers. You know, we focus on the spiritual, and we should. The spiritual is very important. But the physical is also important. You know, if you don't take care of yourself physically, you're not going to be much use spiritually. It is debilitating when you've got a serious health problem, which, you know, I've had for the last 8 months. And it can get you down. It can be quite depressing, quite discouraging. And that affects your relationship with God too, your spiritual life. It's hard to concentrate on the spiritual things when you've got some serious physical problems. So it's important to take care of yourself physically. Very important to do that. And we should all be doing that. And in fact, the Apostle Paul made it clear that it's a command. You know, the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. And we are to take care of it. We are to look after our bodies. So take care of your body. You won't be much use to anybody if your body falls apart.